That's the only mishap, besides the time I shat my pants because I...
Oh, please, do tell.
No. Speaking
of... What's that bulge around Cillig's ass? Those are Depends, baby.
Gonna go and do my convention thing. Got my costume, I'm going now. Yeah, we're having a ball. It's Star Trek, y'all. Hey, there's a border.
Everyone, welcome to episode 5 of the Shuttle Pod Show. Today we have special guest John Fleck, the notorious Cillig. We'll be answering some more of your fan questions, doing some Star Trek trivia, and many more things. We'll also be naming my avocado tree. But before we do that, here are our hosts, Connor Trenier and Dominic Keating.
Hi,
Erica.
Hi, guys.
How are you doing,
how
love?
You? We're naming the tree.
We are.
That's not code, is it?
No.
Hey, buddy. How's your week?
It was off, as you know.
Right.
Yeah, I moped around the house and caught up with nothing in particular.
As I cruised the Caribbean.
Yeah, yes, you were busy on the Star Trek cruise that I was not invited to.
Right. Well,
again.
We'll figure that one out.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. How was it? You had a good time?
Oh, it was fantastic. It's great to see friends. It's also one of the things about the cruise that's really, really fun is that as opposed to a traditional convention, you kind of get this, after a day together, calm, where you're all kind of just interacting with one another and there's not this sort of race to get the autograph or to see you in the Q&A. And,
it's not cocktail hour for a week.
It's cocktail hour for a week long.
So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Trekkies and Trekkers, welcome back to the pod. This week, to help us suck down some of the captain's bourbon, as dear Erica said, is the fabulous, another incredible Star Trek alum. You'll know him better as the dastardly Cillig. I'm not sure that I ever saw him in the flesh when we were actually shooting the show.
Right.
And we will get to talk about that. Our dear friend, John Fleck. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you for coming on, buddy.
Namaste.
Namaste.
It's been 20 years, hasn't it? I mean, we have not seen each other in all that time. Do you do the conventions? Do you?
You know, I did a few conventions and then I stopped doing them. First of all, they weren't asking me to and I didn't pursue it. So,
all right. No biggie.
I wanted to ask you guys, did you guys ever have any fans that went a little too far and got your contact information?
I had a stalker.
Okay.
I had a full-on stalker who actually wound up writing me a letter with a red maple leaf that was in my backyard within the envelope.
Yeah.
Oh,
That was the Gramercy House, wasn't it?
Yeah, no.
She found out where he lived. And
yeah, but there is somewhat of a firewall these days in terms of, I guess, with our technology. But man, she was doing handwritten letters, calling me from payphones, and you know, my son was like less than 6 months old. It was stressful.
Yeah,
it was hard.
I bet.
Yeah.
You know, I did my last one was in Vegas. 15 years ago. Mm. And I remember afterwards, some people said, oh, come have a drink with us, you know, after it. And I went and had a drink. And I won't mention her name, but she took a liking to me and she found me through Facebook. And then she found my email address. Then she found, my real address. So I started getting letters that she would like to see me and stuff.
Well,
like
it's
that.
Shockingly not hard to get your address.
I know.
You really
and how long have you been married?
To her. She was well off.
The mother of my children.
The Lord works in mysterious ways. So.
But I will say this, though. For the most part, though... you know, the fans and the environment that we find ourselves in post-show, they're really quite lovely.
Yeah.
And I've met dear friends from our conventions.
Indeed.
And almost all of it has been really a lovely experience.
God bless, for the most part. No,
there's nothing in the entertainment world that's like this environment that has been created with Star Trek.
That's true.
With the conventions. And their commitment to us and our commitment, frankly, back to them.
Yeah.
You know, we go.
But
if you didn't like it,
you wouldn't. And, you know, obviously John didn't like it much and he doesn't go. So we're very lucky to have you, darling.
Well, darling, I wasn't a series regular. You know, I was a recurring guest star. And, you know, there's just a certain limit.
Oh, I still was jealous of all the words you got to say in episodes where I had to go, yes, Captain. No, 3 bags full, Captain. Trust me. Let's just jump into that for a second, because I want to talk to you about that fearful makeup that you had to endure. I mean, I did it once for one episode, And I know of what you speak. It it was something else. I mean, I've said before publicly, come 4 a.m. when they take that shit off my face.
Right.
And you'd stare in that mirror and I just looked like a ravaged drag queen.
Yeah.
I mean, pulled through the hedge backwards.
But one good thing is, you know, after doing it so much, I'm going to be 71 in May.
You look fabulous, by the way.
People say you shouldn't say how old you are, but I say, you know, we're age pioneers. You know, we have to go carry on the Star Trek tradition, go to worlds with it.
For those of you only listening in, but he literally has the body of a 16-year-old.
I do. Here, I'll show it to you. I'll show it to you right now. But I was going to say, you know, at 4 a.m. when they're taking that stuff, I wrote about it in a show once, you feel like you're being flayed alive.
Yeah.
But it's like dermabrasion. I swear I look 20 years younger because of all that derma and the scrubbing with the alcohol and the brushes.
It's pretty grim.
You get raw.
After a 12, 14, 15-hour day.
And then what's it like to be in 12, 14, 15-hour days in that?
Thank God for meditation. You know, I was talking to Erica and Mark, you know, how just... I do transcendental meditation. I just got to tell you, you know, being in that makeup after 12, 13 hours in the skin tight costume, you know, that you can't go to the bathroom unless they zip you out in the back. Anyways, I just would lay in the trailer with these giant contact lenses, just keep the clothes and just, you know, breathe. And just because I started to get panicky sometimes.
Did you?
Like, oh, I can't, you know, like take it off.
Right.
You know how you feel embalmed almost. But
right. But
hey, I improved. It was an opportunity to improve my meditation technique.
I'll tell you one thing, because yes. I've recently been watching the show again after all these years. And I watched that episode. I went in as a Suliban. And I'll say one thing. You know, you've ever done mask work as an actor?
Mm-hmm.
I suddenly remembered, and I was watching the brief moment I had as a Suliban, and just the body movement was tight. It was one of my better days on the show. and I was like, wow, that's something to behold, to see that.
Well, I'll say this too, that, you know, when I was doing the show, it took me 10 minutes maybe to get... Jeff would spray my face down, put a little, you know, mascara on.
Well, that was after the 2.5 weeks in hair.
With the frosted tips. But so just after Enterprise, I did a show called Stargate Atlantis where I was playing somewhat of a, like a hybrid monster. And I would have to come
Michael.
In. Michael. And I would have to come in at 3:30
in the morning.
Not much of a
villain's name, but nevertheless, he was quite dastardly.
It was very dark. But I would come in at like 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the morning and, you know, be ready for an 8 o'clock shoot. And I wouldn't be anywhere near that character. But as the process went on, as they layered, you know, thing after thing on top of me, the character began to show up. And by the time makeup was done and costume was done, I was locked in. To playing that guy.
That's how Meryl Streep works, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, outward, inward, or whatever.
She's my free pass.
She does it with accents.
Right.
She goes through her wardrobe of accents and picks on art.
Hey, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah. But did you find any of that?
Definitely. You know, one reason I played so many, besides Silly, I played so many. I think with the mask work, you know, not every actor can do that, you know, because you do have to express a little bit more without being too big with all that makeup. Right.
Physicality.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember the one of the episodes in Star Trek I was working, the director, but he told me as an alien, he said, always keep your head down a little bit so it opens your eyes. He says, that's, you know, especially with the contacts. We spent all that money on those contacts.
Right.
So that will, you know, open your eyes. Because my first thought, you know, when you get in periods, you know, I raise
you're ready to.
Yeah, nice. So, but, you know, bring it down. And so the eyes in the camera.
No, it's a very physical performance you bring to it. And I, you had a certain stance, I noticed, that you use for Silic that was rather lovely.
You know, I was looking at old YouTube videos because I it's all a blur, you know, because so much of my time in those contexts was sitting around the set with my eyes closed. I don't even know if you guys were there, but, you know, and then having to be led around because you can't see.
Huh,
but I looked at these YouTube videos and you know what? I was kind of impressed, you know, and I noticed the eyes look great. And then I thought, but the teeth, you know, say what you will about me. I have very pretty teeth. It kind of was an anomaly to see this alien with pretty teeth. But then I was also standing, I had a belly and I thought, oh dear, you know, aliens don't have bellies.
I will say,
really?
You've lost that paunch.
I have lost
you
that
have
paunch.
Lost that paunch. You, man,
for those of you when you're listening in, he really has the body.
There's a 16-year-old
I want to show you. I dare not.
You look great, John.
Oh, Erica, I live for you.
You really do.
Thank you.
She's not paid.
Oh,
Obviously, this wasn't your first job on Star Trek. Talk us back. Who did you meet first? Rick and Brannon back in the day?
Oh, geez. Who did I meet? I mean, David Livingston was my first connection.
Was he?
Yes, and right. God bless him.
David,
you know,
how did you... He was your first director?
I think he was my first director. And he kept, you know how we love auditioning. I didn't have to audition. He just kept making me offers for different characters. So I worked with him about 3 or 4 times, you know, different incarnations, you know.
What was the first stop? Was it Deep Space Nine or was it?
Oh, no, it was Next Generation.
Way back when.
I tortured LeVar Burton.
Did you?
Yes, yes.
You took his glasses off.
I took his glasses off, put them on. I tried them on myself.
Spat in them. Were you in prosthetics then? Or
I was, was I Romulan? I just had the ear, you know, but not as severe.
Not full on.
No. Right. It only took.
Did we ever get to see you as you on Star Trek?
Well, you actually, the last episode of Enterprise, I was a shapeshifter, a Suaban, and I got to shapeshift into human. Yes, and we shot on the Paramount. You know, back lot there.
On season 4, last episode. I haven't gotten there yet.
Yes.
So, talking of plays,
yes.
I believe you're in one at the moment.
I am? Who told you? I am, yes.
A Little Dicky Bird.
A Little Dicky Bird. Yes, I'm doing a show at the Odyssey Theater on the west side of Los Angeles, which is not a fun drive from Los Feliz to the west
that's
side.
That's work.
Oh, man. Yeah. But hey, that's another story. I'm doing the show called It's Alive. It's Alive! And me and my... writing partner, if you want to call him that, David Schweitzer, collaborator from way back. We wanted to create something in August of 2020, you know, during the pandemic at the Odyssey, you know, to celebrate the resiliency of theater. You know, you can, you know,
so you didn't sit around the house scratching your ass and drinking whiskey in the morning.
Well,
like I did.
It wasn't my idea to do this. David Schweitzer, he pitched the idea to Beth. So
God bless.
I blame it all on him.
Good for you.
But I said, what the, you know, I'm not. Nobody's acting. Nobody's doing anything. Right. So I started writing. So, but anyways, month after month, tick, 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 postponement. And it's I started to write about COVID and, you know, all the conspiracy theories going on and created this little mini opera. But, you know, events keep changing. That's the problem with doing these time specific pieces. You know, it's like, I've had to change it. So anyways, we're doing it now at the Odyssey for a 5-week run. And it's been great. Been getting great reviews. And of course, World War III had to break out now. Yeah. I make a comment during the show. It just, you know, as soon as the shit in Ukraine happened, I called David. I said, well, we need to cancel the show. It just feels so irrelevant. But he made a point. I mean, in a way, we're shining a little light on how the seeds of tyranny and misinformation can kind of sprout anywhere like this country, you know. And also, I think theater... Nobody's been in a theater for 2 years.
I was going to come to that.
And the people who come, even though they have to wear masks and it looks like a Halloween party gone horribly wrong, but they're so grateful for the most part to be there and to like, it's a communal experience. Yeah. And that's why theater still exists.
And why we felt the same way in some respect, how silly it was to be, you know, pretending we were on a spaceship after 9/11 to get back, not to dwell too much. But, you know, for that 40 minutes that someone tuned in to watch that show at that time, it was an escape.
Mm-hmm.
And is a service.
Right. It is
not
a service.
To blow a horn too loud or to
I'll say this. When you got the job, and to me, when I got Enterprise, I thought this was, you know, the opportunity of a lifetime for a professional actor being in L.A. You've got a show. You're on. And 9/11 happened, and I felt hollow. Mm-hmm. I felt, what am I doing? What difference could I make? It's not doing this at all. I got on the phone with my dad, and I shared this with him, and he said, "You're wrong. You're wrong. You are giving whoever wants, whoever needs to pay attention to what your story is." You're giving them an hour.
And yeah.
You're giving them
with commercials.
and then he was like, no. What you are is a storyteller.
Yeah.
Tell those stories.
You know.
And let those stories land where they will. And
not to sound hackneyed but it's true. There's a service there. And
after your father told you this, you asked for more money, right?
I did. I said, Dad, I can't pay rent.
No, you got a big bump in salary from Rick Berman over there.
Yes. Rick called up and said, I think that was fantastic. Your dad.
And we've seen this face on at the conventions, people coming up to the table and say, you know, you helped me through one of the worst periods of my life. And it can get pretty heavy.
It happened on the cruise. I mean, this happens.
Many divorces.
This happens every time I'm at a convention. And this is an interesting thing about that is that, you know, somebody will walk up and say, for instance, I was having a very hard time in my life. And I waited a week to make a decision about what I was going to do for your show to come back.
Right.
And then
it's humbling.
I mean, it's totally humbling. Totally.
And, you know, and not a little, I don't know, one gives thanks that, yeah, right. And it just makes you feel like you've done something, you know, relevant.
Right.
You
know, exactly.
Sometime.
So, but I
life.
Wanted to ask you, you've done a lot of one man shows, right?
Yeah.
Was that initially what you were doing, or did you, when you came here?
I came here to go to acting school from Cleveland. I drove cross country when I was 24, you know, and so the American Academy of Dramatic Arts was opening up their West Coast branch, and they must have been desperate. I had never really acted before, but I prepared a monologue and they accepted me. And so I drove my Volkswagen out, and I, you know, for 2 years, I got the basics. And then afterwards, I didn't know what I was doing, you know. So I kept studying, you know. I started to study improv and the dance. I got it. Then voice, you know. I used to have like a 4.5-octave voice. When I started performing, that's, you know, I'd get up on bars, basically, you know, kind of just flashing all over the place. But anyways, you know, after all this study, you know, and I'm doing little theater, and I started performing in these like punk, you know, clubs, performance space clubs.
Right.
And I get on, you know, like the first time I did, I opened for Edie Massey, the egg lady from Pink Flamingos. I don't know if you
Yes.
Remember, she's in the pen, the playpen.
Right.
She's asking for egg. Anyways, I opened for her. She had an act. She was doing it at a bar, the One Way Bar, this kind of S&M kind of punky club in Silver Lake. Very seedy. Anyways, I got on top of a bar. Why am I telling you this story? And I pulled my pants down and I sang, "There's no penis like show penis." And, you know, because these were all punkers, and they'd throw bottles at you if they didn't like it. So they want to go, "Oh, fuck." So is that all there is? But anyways, do better than that, dude. But then I sang a Puccini aria, you know.
Look at you. Voices,
yes.
Wow.
Anyway, so
nice.
I have.
That came out of the one-eyed monster.
That's a neat trick.
It's a little sound bump. Oh, God.
Again, boss.
So I don't know why. I'm just jumping all over. But I started doing these shows, and they just kept getting bigger and weirder. And so the National Endowment for the Arts. Somebody said, you should apply for a National Endowment for the Arts. You can make $5,000. This was in 89. I was doing a show called Blessed Are Little Fishes. That originated in a club thing where I did a live thing. And I had this thing where I urinated into a bowl. It's like, I'm praying, God, please, God. I came out drinking like a fish in a mermaid outfit. And anyways,
Could you always rely on yourself to have a pee at the given
well,
moment?
Well, it was a one-timer, but I ended up...
Because that is dry.
I know.
I'm sorry, I've dried.
I decided to do it as a run at the Tiffany Theater on Sunset Boulevard.
Tiffany.
Well, damn
shut
it.
The front door.
Yeah, baby.
My first job in L.A.
All right.
It's gone now.
I know. It's all gone. They tore it down.
Yeah.
So I applied for this National Endowment for the Arts for this crazy show, and I could pee every time on cue.
No kidding.
It's a gift.
I'm a good crier and a good peer on cue.
Juggling, fencing, horse riding, peeing on cue.
One of my special skills. Yeah. Remember special skills?
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What was your most unusual special skill?
Well, I listed all of them.
All of them.
I was like, I can ride a horse and juggle and do magic all at the same time. And then I got called out on a job one time, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, shit.
But so you do this.
Yes, I do this. These crazy shows. And anyway, I got the National Endowment for the Arts. And then, you know, Senator Jesse Helms, it was 1990, and all these conservative kind of religious politicians, they said, this is obscene. So
Was Tipper Gore a part of that too?
She had something to do with decency for something like protecting children from indecents like myself. Anyways, we got the grants, and then because of the political pressure, they took away the funding, and we went to the Supreme Court. You know,
yes.
We
took, but let me ask case. You. So,
well, hang on. Don't make light of the Supreme. Went to the Supreme Court?
Everybody did except me, because I was working on a TV show. Oh, yeah.
That's an accident.
But a government grant being taken away was unusual, right?
Yeah, they had never done that before. Right. Yeah, you know, to give funding and then take it away.
What sort of year was this then?
Was 1990.
1990, yes, so it was still effectively the 80s and still sort of throwback 80s politics.
So how did you wind up being part of the four?
Well, because we had all four performance artists had gotten the funding, and then they took it away. So we became the NEA Four. And it was three basically gay performance artists and Karen Finley, who liked to smear chocolate all over her body and everything.
But she's more than that.
They
you know,
took money away from her?
Well, you know, in out of context. So, you know, I got labeled, you know, the guy that masturbates on stage. I never masturbated on stage. Or they, you know, like I'd go in for auditions and they'd go, you know, casting people would say, oh, no, don't go peeing on the furniture because, you know, I got that was part of my show. But I don't know, just labels, how people label you, you know.
Yeah.
Poor Karen got labeled the chocolate smeared lady. But, you know, there was beautiful messages. I mean, we were really, it wasn't just to be obscene or, you know, shocking. There were great stories there.
Well,
too,
it's the sense of exactly what art is, which is to challenge, question, and wonder about who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah, and people do it in different ways.
Absolutely.
You know? As Harry S. Truman said, one man's profanity is another man's philosophy.
There you go.
And then he said, we're going to drop that goddamn
exactly.
bomb.
Well, some got to win, some got to lose.
That's right.
But performance art was pretty huge in those early years, wasn't
it? It was,
and,
yes.
I remember when I showed up in L.A., and I remember being in Hollywood and seeing some extraordinary stuff.
Yeah. It's kind of, I'm kind of getting out now after this show. I think this is my last big hurrah. But yeah, in the early 90s, late 80s, there was a heavy performance.
It was a groundswell of it, wasn't there?
But I do remember meeting a producer once, Joel Stern from the Matrix Theater. I remember he said, so you're a performance artist, huh?
Uh-huh.
He says, what does that mean? You can't act? And that's what most people think when they hear, you know, performance art. You know,
that's hilarious.
It's never gotten me a Hollywood job. Nobody's ever come see my show.
Right.
But if you get press, like, you know, after this whole NEA thing happened, Stephen Bochco, you know, that's when I got my first series, Murder
really?
One, in 1995. I played the gay secretary, which was, you know, there weren't a lot of gay characters on.
But how
TV
far did you go into the, you know, Supreme Court judgment about this? And how involved were you?
Well, we had lawyers, you know, obviously, you know, so it was weird. I mean, all these three other guys, you know, the NEA four, they're so much smarter than me. They're all, you know, they're all college educated. And I'm just kind of a primal, intuitive guy, you know. And I went on the Oprah Winfrey show. None of them would, but I was thinking, well, you know, I'm acting now. You know, any publicity is good publicity.
And this got you on her show, so to speak.
Right,
I mean,
right.
There was a natural, there was an interest. To
well,
all, right.
it was a freak show. She had, you know, the NEA four, you know, decadent art, you know, being right. defunded. And then they had a anti-abortionist.
And the Jim Rose sideshow.
Oh, it was just like everybody.
We all got cars. Well, yes. Okay. Let's go back to some acting.
Okay, yes.
I saw on the notes you did an episode of Seinfeld.
Yes.
Which one? I mean, I was a huge fan in my day of the Seinfeld.
It was their first season. I think it was like show number 5 or 6. And it was called George Costanza Has a Heart Attack. And I remember working on it, and not Keith Richards, Michael Richards.
All right.
Yes.
I wish it was Keith.
Yes, and so does he.
Yep.
But he was
living it down.
He was riding a bicycle, you know, there, and he says, I'm not buying a car. They're going to cancel. Because the series wasn't doing well.
They're going to cancel. Were tough.
Yeah. So, hey.
But I want to ask about Howard the Duck.
Oh my God, we're really digging deep.
We are, because Howard the Duck was...
I don't even know what that is.
Howard the Duck had a moment in time when they were about to sort of like, they were figuring out like technology and how to...
This was a movie, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
And Howard the Duck was meant to be just this blockbuster.
Right.
George Lucas produced
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that
yes.
laid a turd.
Oh, big turd. Ruined a lot of careers. There.
Exactly. So okay. We're going to move on to some fan questions
for you
and all of us. Oh. And Erica, I think you have them set up for us. Have we figured out the name of the avocado tree yet?
Oh, well, we have, haven't we?
My vote is Floyd.
Floyd.
I like Floyd the avocado.
We could take votes, but I think we've named it Wash. Maybe that could be its middle name.
Wash Floyd.
Wash Floyd.
Wash Floyd avocado.
Oh. Well, we got a lot of fans online asking us to name the tree. And our favorite suggestion was to name it Hoban Washburn, the pilot of the Serenity on the show Firefly, also the movie Serenity. So we're going to call it Wash in honor of that great character whose famous quote from that show and from that movie was, I'm a leaf on the wind. Watch how I soar.
I think it should be called Wash Floyd's Clothes.
I think you all...
How about that?
You all really need to just go to the British audience to name anything.
Ah, that's right.
Boaty McBoatface. And they'll come up with something good for you.
Right.
Won't you, lads?
I like Wash
Lashes.
Floyd.
All right, so questions from fans.
Okay,
what do we have?
So the first question isn't actually a question, but you guys got so many of the similar comments about it. So I'm going to turn it into one. Okay. At Kiki Natalia on Twitter, she made a comment saying, looking forward to John Fleck's conversation. Like I said the other day, I loved to hate Cilic. What a character. So the question is, what did you love and what did you hate about playing Cilic?
What did I love about Cilic? After 18 hours, I'd get to take my makeup off. That's what I love the most. No. What did I love? You know what? I was looking at old clips last night and I goes, oh, you know, I just love the role. I love to act. You know, you get a part, you know, and you, under a pile of makeup, but it's still, I don't know, it just was fun. And I love the relationship I had with Scott. And
I was going to ask you about tell us some Scott stories, because what a guy. I mean, he made those years joyous for us.
Oh, you know, what a kind, decent guy, you know. And because he started in the theater, too. I swear people who start in the theater are just more human with one another, you know. And he was just so receptive. And,
I also think that, you know, our shows attract theater actors. To be able to do it, you have to have done some studying and knowing how to carry a speech and live that on a stage. And I think
and make that world, which is somewhat, you know, we've talked briefly about this already, but it's a sort of Shakespearean world in space, if you will, in many respects. And you have to have some sort of, you know, understanding of that.
But you know, it's funny, when I auditioned for Cilic, you know, in the room with Junie Lowry and Rick and all the people.
And Ron Surma.
Ron Surma.
John, you're doing great.
Back in the days when we used to audition in rooms and be able to turn it on in front of people and impress. I know. I miss those days, to be honest. I really do.
You know, I had a big little boo-boo right in the middle of my thing, because I was talking, you know, as John talks, about coming to somewhere. And I said, I stopped and I said, we're going to keep the cameras rolling, but we do not say coming in outer space. We say coming.
Yes.
And then I went. And you know what? That was that in-life person auditioning in a room instead of self-taping.
Yeah.
You know, that is so cold and inhuman.
Right.
Boy, self-tapes. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm diverging.
Well, how do you feel about
self-tapes? It's all attitude, isn't it?
I don't know. I kind of like it.
Well, you know, there's something great about it. We can do as many takes.
I like the fact you don't have to drive over to the west side of LA at 5 on Friday afternoon in your little black dress.
Exactly. But there is something about you are playing a room.
Right.
You know.
Well, and also, you know, self-tape, at least when in rooms, I felt like maybe you're up against 10 other guys, or, you know, we're all in there. But now with self-tapes, they must get hundreds of them.
Yeah, there's hundreds.
Oh, they do?
And what you don't get with the tape is, you don't get that pizzazz moment in the room where you know you just did it in front of 7 people.
Right.
Who were all the decision makers, and you were off book and you nailed it.
Yes, yes.
And it's a showtime.
Yes.
And you don't, that's missing.
But just so you know, for the audience, before COVID, what we did was we would walk into an audition and you would have a casting director, a camera, sometimes a producer or two, but you would...
Certainly if you were down to the wire for a proper big job, it was a room full of people. Right. There'd be half a dozen people in there.
You were walking into a scenario where you were making sure you were communicating something. What happens now is, you know, I can put a camera against my wall and do 47 takes of something, and then I think...
God knows has. And I've read with him.
Oh, my God. It's epic. But what winds up happening is that you think...
Really? One more?
You think that you've done something that is the best you could do. But that's...
It's a unique
You don't know
thing.
How it's received.
It's an obscure environment. And if you're not in a room with people, if you're a storyteller, your job is to tell stories in front of people and to make them land.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that opportunity, you are operating in a vacuum.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part about this, I think. That's what people don't like. I actually like operating in a vacuum. I have to say that.
I just like operating.
Your voice gets so much sexier.
I got very close.
Is that
to
your vacuum voice?
I'm operating.
I like
right
it.
Now, I'm operating in a vacuum here right now.
It's funny, speaking of voices, if I may, because I used to talk a lot, like, you know, when you play aliens with this very low voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I had to talk like that in all my auditions after that. And that's why, why aren't I booking you? And finally I said, John, just be your fucking
self. Use your voice.
I don't know. Kiefer Sutherland did rather well with that voice.
Oh, is that really?
For 35 years.
You don't think that's
his
real voice?
enjoyed.
He's done every performance he's
he
ever
actually
given.
Talks like this off stage.
Oh, really?
Oh, it is. I mean, I have to, you don't sit in particularly an episodic.
People are always talking in this kind of whispered voice.
Yes, could you speak up just a little bit?
I can. I'm being very serious right now.
That's right. Yeah.
It's dramatic. Voice. Yes.
John.
Oh, God. Right. Oh, my yeah. God.
People want to know what you hate about Plain Silic.
Oh, God. You're still holding on to that. I'll wrap it up real fast. The only thing I hated was, you know, hours and hours of makeup in this tight outfit. And then if you had to go to the bathrooms, somebody yeah. had to accompany you to zip you up in the back. It was just like a very humbling experience.
Mm. Yeah. And we're not trying to pin you down. There's so many fans who have been saying, oh, my God, I love to hate Silic. I love him, but he's such a terrible alien.
You know, I got to say, looking at, you know, my YouTube videos last night, I was saying, you know, I was kind of sexy. I could see loving and hating me at the same time. So,
anyway, I mean, but overall, you enjoyed the experience with
us. Oh, you
I
know.
Mean, it was a nice set, wasn't it? It was a nice set.
You know, like I said, I did so many different episodes, you know, different characters. And I don't know, I just enjoyed it. Fun being, as you know, being a series regular or recurring, you do feel like part of the family.
Yeah,
and yes. You feel like, oh, what I'm doing, it's important. You know, it keeps it part of the family.
Let me ask you, what's the favorite role you've ever had?
Oh, boy.
Do you have one?
In TV or film? Or
no, anything.
Oh,
anything.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I got to say, in terms of film, probably the best scene I ever had was with Michael Douglas in Falling Down, you know?
That good
was
film.
Like 93.
What scene was that?
I lost him in MacArthur's Park and, you know, yes. I say I'm a vet, you know, or something. I
right.
He throws an apple.
I remember that scene. I didn't put it together that was you, but yeah, that's a great scene.
Joel Schumacher working with him.
Right.
Boy, those were the days, you know, early 90s, especially after the NEA shitstorm happened. All of a sudden, people started calling me in out of curiosity mostly. And then all of a sudden, I started booking Joel Schumacher, auditioned for him. Marion Daugherty, do you remember her?
Right, yes. Yeah.
Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. She brought me in for
big
several
time casting.
Things. Yes.
Lady.
And I remember Joel Schumacher, I did it, and like we talked about being live after I left. I just, wow, I felt really good. He actually came out and says, you know, you did a damn good job. I want you. That's never happened since. But that made it really memorable for me.
What else have I got here in the notes?
Yes.
Yes. You wrote a theater piece, and I'm going to let you say this.
Nothing.
Now that we live in these times. Freaks and... Can we say that even now in this day and age? I don't know.
On our show?
Freaks and the F word.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Not
okay.
That F word.
Well, you know, I love to be a little controversial. So this was from... I was telling Eric and Mark and Chris that I did this little bit within the show, and the show was even more of a horrific title called Nothing Beats a Pussy. That was the name of my
I
piece.
I like that.
Oh, my God.
And this was a...
fantastic.
Apparently we can't say this, people.
but the genesis of that, it was what my father gave me. It was his, my heart-to-heart with my father. I just moved to California, and I went back to California. And I was just getting into exploring my ambient sexual being or whatever. I remember it was the early 70s. I came back with these big sunglasses. My dad was a big macho guy, you know, drinker and carpenter guy. He sat me down. He says, you're not a fruit, are you? And I go, no. What makes you think that? And he says, well, let me tell you something. And he took just a, you know, like, okay, dad's really thinking. He says, nothing beats a pussy. And that was it, man. And I go, wow, that was my one heart to heart. So I wrote a show based around this.
That's brilliant.
My God.
Thanks, Dad.
And part of my show was how I made a living turning lemons into lemonades. I started playing freaks, all these aliens. And then when I did Murder One, I played the gay guy. So I was just getting offers to play, you know, gays. So I wrote this little part called Freaks and Fags. And I'm laughing all the way to the bank. You know, I'd sign pictures and try to sell them to people, stuff like that.
But nothing.
So did you find, though, that initially, was it as a result of the NEA4 that you were sort of, I guess, compartmentalized and do a
freaky kind of role?
I didn't say that.
But you were thinking it. I could tell.
The freaky fag actor.
Oh, geez. Well, hey, I didn't play a freaky fag guy in Joel Schumacher's, thing. No, it was just, but I turned some good, some series roles. You know, I turned on like Jeffrey, you know, that play Jeffrey that played at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. That was Mammoth, wasn't it?
And I said, I don't want to play too many gay roles. Now I'm a serious actor.
Yeah,
I'm not an animal. I'm a human being.
That's right. We've all done that. I remember just after Enterprise ended, I was like, saying to my agent, I was like, you know what? I don't want to right now do some sci-fi roles. I just want to play some straight characters.
Don't you wish?
And then this next audition was Michael in Stargate Atlantis. And I was like, I think that's great. I'm going for
that's fantastic. I'd love
that character. Exactly. Recurring? Fantastic. Oh, yes. I'm there for you. All right. So we're going to go to some trivia, right, Erica?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. So we play a little game.
By
here.
The way, we're terrible at this.
I'm talking worse.
And Mark seems to be the ringer.
All right. Well, it's you three against Mark.
All three of us against Mark.
That helps.
Star Trek alumni versus producer Mark.
Versus the sentient.
We're going to start with Dominic.
Okay.
And most of them are multiple choice, so not to worry. Dominic, which of the following was not a founding species of the United Federation of Planets? A, Vulcans, B, Andorians, C, Bajorans, D, Tellarites.
Mark.
I'm going to go with not Vulcans, not the Andorians. What were the other ones?
Those guys.
The Bajorans.
Bajorans and Tellarites.
I'm going to go with, but not a founding member of the Federation. So would they have let the Andorians in given that the Vulcans hated them?
Oh,
it's a tough
dive.
Call,
that's
isn't it?
That's a deep dive you're taking.
That's a tough call.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Andorians.
Mark.
Damn, it's the Bajorans.
It's the Bajorans.
Mark.
It's the Bajorans.
Damn. Well, that's some messed up stuff.
That's right.
That was a trick question.
Oh, John, you're next.
Uh-oh.
Yeah?
Okay, let me...
Okay, what real-world terrorist organization were the Suleiman named after?
Oh, come on.
The Taliban.
Yes.
Yay! What do I win? Money?
You get
to watch the lizard mow the lawn and drink
water. That's right, exactly. Yeah.
The name Suleiman was coined by Rick Berman after the Taliban months before the September 11th attacks. According to Berman, the Taliban was just a mysterious, exotic name to me. There was something incredibly dramatic about the name. It was like something out of a Sinbad story. Okay, Connor.
Uh-huh.
Your turn.
Mm-hmm.
In Broken Bow, Captain Archer gets shot in the leg. What seemingly inappropriately named creature does Dr. Phlox use to help heal the wound? A, a cauterizing starfish. B, an osmotic starfish. C, an osmotic eel. Or D, a cauterizing eel.
Oh, it's the one
that's
two.
A lot of the same.
It's one or two.
I think it's A.
It's two. It's God the second one, isn't it?
No.
It's not a starfish.
It's not a...
It's an eel.
It's...
Mark.
It's not an eel.
Mark knows.
Not a eel.
Yeah.
Damn!
Even though it looks like a four-armed sea star, the little creature is called an osmotic eel.
Oh. Well, see, that was my thing. Like I thought it was a starfish, and consequently...
That was another trick question.
Oh, yeah. Boo.
So that's 2-1.
Okay, Mark. There were two original series episodes that mentioned Corbomite. One was the Corbomite maneuver. What was the other?
The Corbomite incident.
There's a multiple choice.
Okay, go ahead with the multiple choice.
Does it even matter?
A, obsession. B, dagger of the mind. C, the deadly years. D, the city on the edge of forever.
Yeah, Mark.
Oh, he's not so sure.
Yeah, right.
On this one.
Starting up the lawnmower.
What are they?
A, obsession. B, dagger of the mind. C, the deadly years. Or D, the city on the edge of forever. Is that what you're guessing?
Yeah, it's wrong.
It's wrong.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
It's. Does someone else want to guess?
I think dagger of the mind.
Sorry, you guys.
Nuts.
It's the deadly years.
Deadly years.
So the resolution of the plot of this episode involves a bluff by Captain Kirk, who refers to an imaginary piece of equipment he calls a Corbomite device. Oh,
wow. It's what Galaxy Quest is based on.
Oh.
No. Dominic, are you ready for yours? In the third season episode, E2, Archer and the crew encounter another Enterprise NX-01 that had traveled to the year 2037 and was now crewed by their descendants. What was the name of the executive officer, Archer's great-granddaughter?
Oh, my word.
Uh-huh.
A, Erica. Not me, but her. B, Acilia. C, Karen. Or D, Margaret.
God, I hope it's Karen.
I'm hoping it's Margaret, actually.
Okay. Wouldn't be great.
And her boyfriend, Ken. Margaret.
I feel Margaret. Margaret.
I'm going with D, Margaret.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, man.
Karen? It's... Or, no.
Acilia.
It's... Karen.
No! Yeah, you changed your mind.
I was going to steal that.
The solution of the episode's plot conflict is brought about when Karen asks to speak to the manager.
Oh, Karen.
John. In the episode, The Expanse, an alien device attacks Earth, cutting a trench into the Earth's surface between which two places?
We just talked about this.
A, France and Morocco. B, Florida and Venezuela. C, Italy and Libya, or D, Louisiana and Mexico?
B.
Okay, I'm getting some vibrations here. Okay. I think Venezuela's in the news right now with the oil and Florida. Oh, they just passed.
I like where you're going with this.
I like where you're going with this.
I'll go for, what was the other ones? No, I'll go for Florida, Venezuela.
Yes.
He helped me on.
You're right.
But hey, I got two.
Hey.
The alien attack causes the death of 7 million people, of which Commander Tucker's sister is one, courtesy of Silic, Captain
Archer. Oh, and don't we know it.
Captain Archer learns that a race called the Zindi were behind the attack, and they are planning the destruction of Earth.
Wow.
Connor, this one's for you.
Oh, no.
What was T'Pol's mother's occupation? A.
Oh, shush.
Uh-huh.
A, captain of a Vulcan science ship. B, instructor of a Vulcan science academy. C, medical doctor to high command. Or D, spiritual leader.
Oh, it's B or D.
It's B or D. What was B again?
What was B again? Yeah.
B is instructor at Vulcan science academy.
I'm going to go with my instinct, which is mechanic.
A mechanic?
Off of that, I'll go with D, spiritual leader. Nuts.
B, isn't it?
I'm still not mowing my own lawn.
In the episode Home, T'Pol gets married so that her mother can get her position at the Science Academy back.
Tayless, T'Pol's mother, was in fact an instructor at the Vulcan Science Academy.
Yes, she was. I have a new question if we want to substitute it.
Throw it out there.
Should we?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to give Connor a new one.
All right.
Okay.
Which species of Zindi was extinct in the show?
Oh, I know this one.
Oh, Mark. You're obnoxious. Could I have a slap?
Which species of Zindi?
Of Zindi was extinct in the show.
What do you mean species? They're the Zindi. Is there more than one Zindi?
Mark is waving his hand.
A, insectoids. B, aquatics. C, avians. Or D, primates.
Aquatics. It's not the aquatics because they're in it.
It's primates.
No.
God damn it.
Mark. It's the insects.
Mark. The avians.
Yes.
The avians.
We only ever seen a skull of avian during the show.
Damn.
Well, I wanted to give it to you, Connor.
You gave it to him good.
Can you still?
Would you please?
Mark. God okay. This is the last question, unless we have a tie somehow. Mark, what is Captain Kirk's military serial number?
Oh, yeah, Mark. Jeez Louise.
What is that?
I have no idea.
777?
I'm going to give you multiple choice.
Okay.
A, 3344355.5. B, 41353535. C, 937-0175.
Anyway, that's my phone number. Stop.
867-5301.
937-0176 CEC. Or D, 91111 Earth.
D. Mm-hmm.
It's got to be the 9111 Earth, isn't it?
9111 Earth.
It's not.
Oh, jeez.
I have no idea. Anyway, I still won 3-2.
Oh, Jesus. Well, oh, you're so proud of yourself.
It's, it's honestly, C, 937016.
He wins
0,
every
7,
week.
6, easy.
It's bloody annoying.
937016.
He's sitting right next to the answers on a piece of paper.
See them.
Jesus.
This is the first time I've been sitting close to her before, so.
This is my only experience, and I see what I see. I say we need all new questions, and we need to separate.
All right, guys. Well, producer Mark wins.
Connor and Dominic are tied for losing, so both of them have to do promos at the end of the episode.
Oh, okay. Boo. Oh. Well, how many different episodes or series have you been on?
What do you mean? In my whole life?
TNG, Voyager.
Oh, Star Trek series. Everyone but the original one, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Next Generation, Deep Space, Voyager.
People always want to know were there mishaps or blunders or. Did you have any?
Oh, I, you know, not big blunders, but I remember Kate Mulgrew getting very mad on one. I played a junk dealer and laying on the floor. They, you know, they love to kill me. I think I was dying and she came over. But she kept tripping on all the junk and she kept, and it was late. It was the last, you know, the martini shot. And she just kept tripping over the shit. And she's
literally,
fuck, you know, she got some, but anyways, we got this out. But she was sweet as could be. But, you know, you get a little irritable after, sure. You know. When you're carrying a series and you have to work all these that's hard like, days oh, and
yes,
all that money.
And all that
but
money.
Anyway, yes. But anyways, any other mishaps? You know, I played this other character out in the desert somewhere with a big headpiece. I don't know what race it was or alien, but it was really hot. It was like 110 degrees and you're under this blanket. And my dripping. Eyes are dripping.
Right.
And it was, you know, I kept tripping because you can't see. And I remember one of the co-stars, I forget who it was, an attractive young blonde lady. Anyway, she couldn't stop it. Just became hysterical.
So it was hilarious.
Yeah, and I understand. I would have done the same thing. You know, but that's the only mishap. Besides the time I shat my pants because I can't.
Oh, please, well, do tell.
No.
Speaking of besides the time I shat my pants.
In diapers.
What's that bulge around Cillig's ass? Those are depends, baby. Because you have to get zipped up to get in and out.
That's hilarious.
Depends. We'll change it at the end of the day.
Connor brought a game to us a couple of weeks ago that we would like to start playing again.
Yeah. So I think I invented this, but I might be wrong about this. So I played this game for years and years and years. The question is this. You're on a deserted island. You are allowed three things. One, an author. Two, a musician, any band, single person.
This is not to sleep with on the island. This is you know, the music.
Everything else is taken care of. It's like the Four Seasons minus three things. Okay.
You've got everything in life except for these three.
You've
factors.
Got your protein. Okay. And the third is your dessert. Now, when I say dessert, I don't mean like, you know, you can pick.
No, that one you can sleep with.
Yeah. You could pick, if you say chocolate ice cream, all ice cream, all cake, all pie.
All pie.
So, So let's start with this. So, John, you are on a deserted island. Yeah. You've got everything going. You're alone for the rest of your life.
Oh, jeez.
So it's not long.
Uh-huh. Oh, God. You had to rub that in. Hey, listen, buddy. You're not that far behind me.
So let's start with this. John, who's your author?
Oh, who is my author? God, oh my, geez, my heart's pounding.
I know, I feel like it's a really thing.
Pressure.
You're alone.
I'm alone. And
who's your author?
Oh, geez, who is my author? I read all these people and I can't remember. Okay, David Sedaris. I'll just say that.
Okay.
I like his short stories.
I like Sedaris. Right. Yeah,
David Sedaris is your author. Yes. Now, who's your musician?
Oh,
who
my
is
God.
It? It's a band or.
Or, you know,
Mozart or
you know.
Whatever.
Jeez, who would be my band? Boy.
It's the rest of your life.
And do you have to hear this band all the time?
Yes, they're playing constantly.
Oh, my God. Well, they better be versatile. I'm going to go with Pink Martini, maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's not a bad choice.
All right, so you've got David Sedaris, Pink Martini.
This is a very fantastic island. Is this island pink?
Well, it's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
Well, we're going to cap this off with your dessert.
Oh, jeez.
Uh-huh.
Now, but this is only one night. I'm not going to eat this every night, am I?
No, it's for the rest of your life on the island.
But again, if you choose something like ice cream, you get all ice cream. Or all cake.
Really, wow, this is like Willy Wonka land.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Got your golden ticket.
Oh, wow.
To your
only place for the rest of your life.
Whoa, boy, sweets are wonderful. Well, a baked Alaska.
Nice.
Have you ever heard of a baked Alaska?
In fact, the whole island could be a baked Alaska.
But you could also say,
could be living on baked Alaska.
Anything with meringue. Yeah. How about that?
I was thinking like lemon meringue. Yeah.
John Fleck has chosen pink martini. Uh-huh.
Sedaris.
David Sedaris.
On Baked Alaska.
And the Baked Alaska.
Meringue. Anything meringue oriented. But I have so much on this island.
Well, John, I just want to say what an absolute pleasure.
Well, it has been a pleasure.
It has been having you.
I was rather dreading this. No, but you know,
I know. I mean, we heard tell. No,
but I had so much fun, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
You were very warm and welcoming.
And by the way, It's Alive, It's Alive is playing through the rest of the week.
No, through March 20th.
Through March 20th.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to post this as of today to go see John's show. Mm-hmm. And man, what a gift to have you here.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a lovely seeing after all these years, though.
Yes, really. Yes. Well,
and to actually see your face.
I know.
But again, really, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
It was a gift to have you here and to share your breadth of stories that you have from your career as an actor and a performer. Yeah, thank you for being
here. One good
thing
about getting older, you got more stories.
That's right.
Someone once said it, his little talent took him all the way from Cleveland to the Supreme Court.
Which I couldn't go to because I was working on a TV show.
That's right, I was busy.
All the way to the end of the pier.
I was
perhaps beyond.
What a sellout I was.
Bless you, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Please come back, John.
You bet, babe.
Thank you.
All right. That was fun, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I want to thank you for coming to my house for today's show. And you, as always, Dom, for...
Thanks, mate.
You know, being on the road with me.
Thanks for having us over, man. Yeah. It's nice to be here with
everyone. Great fun. And John Fleck was fantastic.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, what a mensch, Really, what an artist.
Yeah, an actor's actor, again. And I just love guys that can, girls, actors that can just tell stories like that. It's always, there's nothing more fun than sitting at a table with them, having a couple of drinks.
100%,
And hearing all the stories.
Yeah. It's a breath of fresh air and a reminder of kind of what we do and why we do it.
Yeah.
And also, Erica, thank you so much for all you do. And as always, dear... Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Connor. And thank you, Dominic. And John was great. I thought he was going to take his shirt off, but...
we were hoping. He almost got there, didn't he though?
So
he
close.
Almost got there.
I was
there.
Just like, just do it.
God Come knows, on, man.
I gave him every opportunity. Dom almost did it for himself. Anyway, bless you. Bless you.
Bless you guys.
Bless all
thank
of you.
You
thank you for showing up. And, you know, we'll see you next time.
All right, guys. Peace out.
Cheers. If you liked our interview with John Fleck, like and subscribe to our channel.